Well, g'day, and welcome to another edition of the National Conservative Institute of Australia podcast. My guest today is French political activist Romain Bacri, who is involved in politics on the nationalist right in that country. Today we discuss why the old French political establishment has broken down and the new parties that have emerged on both the right and the left, the latest on Marie Le Pen, Jordan Bardella, Eric Zemmour, Emmanuel Macron, and other identities on the French political scene, the impact of Donald Trump on the French right, and what the future holds for the next presidential election and for France's future more generally, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy our discussion. Bonjour à tous et bienvenue au podcast de l'Institut National Conservateur d'Australie. Notre invité aujourd'hui est Romain Bacri, un activiste de la Rassemblement National en France. Il nous rejoint depuis Saint-Étienne. Bonjour, bonjour and welcome to the National Conservative Institute of Australia, Romain.
Bonjour, Dan. Thank you very much, yeah.
No worries. Lovely for you to make time to chat with us. I thought I would, by way of introduction, just ask you, why did you decide to get involved in politics in France?
That's actually a good question, and I still get asked that often. And so I lived all my life in France, as any French person does. And for the last few months of my engineering degree, I had to do an internship abroad, and I went to Switzerland. I lived for 6 months in Switzerland. And I think that was the biggest realization that made me realize that, okay, I want to get into politics because all of the problems that we have in France, if we just want to fix them, we can. It's not something crazy. Mm. Our closest neighbor has like fixed most of the problems we have, not most of them, but like they're doing much better. And just if we have the will to do it, if we just want to fix things, we can just do it. And I thought to myself, like, if not me, who's gonna do it? And because something has to be done. And I thought, yeah, I mean, if it's not gonna be me, who? And so as soon as I came back to France, I took my card in the party and enlisted, I guess.
And what were the particular concerns? I mean, Saint-Étienne, as we were discussing online, I have been to. It's an industrial part of France, and it has some good universities and an interesting reputation. Was it immigration, which sort of was your
that
major
was
concern?
A big thing? That there was also another aspect with my period in Switzerland. That was during the time where there was the big riots for like. I don't know if you heard about like the Nile riots.
Yeah.
And these were like the worst riots we've had in a while. And why were they the worst riots? Because usually the riots in France there usually has a lot of riots, but usually it's following a demonstration on a particular topic. So usually it's only in Paris. There's a big demonstration in Paris, and then there's some riots here and there, and it just stays around Paris. Mm. And these riots were the first time where they were just all over France. In the small cities, you were just going to have riots and just people like firing at the police.
And what was the cause of that? What triggered those particular riots?
There was like an Algerian kid, a 17-year-old, who was driving recklessly around a city, and there was a chase with the police, and at the end, like, the police shot him, and from them, like, a whole movement happened. But clearly the response was far disproportionate, and even among your average French person like had no interest to support those riots, because clearly there was just people looking for an excuse to go burn things. And of course, the big thing was that there was a big immigration aspect with those riots. There was
was that before Black Lives Matter in the United States or after?
That's the thing. Also, that was like 1 or 2 years afterwards. Mm. And so my sort of reading of it, that it's, they were just looking for an excuse to sort of do the same thing in a way.
Yeah.
That like just, oh, there's something we could use to.
Mm.
That was sort of my reading. And that's so the thing, as I was in Switzerland, I saw all the videos of small cities, like small cute cities in France, mm. just burning. And that was also a big thing that drove me to get into politics.
Yeah, I mean, Switzerland is a well-run place. Its politics has a reputation for being a bit boring. French politics used to also be somewhat boring, right? You had two parties, the party of the right, which I think is now called the Republicans, and the party of the left, which is used to be called the Socialists, and I think they still exist. And it was much like Australia, two parties, and you might have had some Greens or a few little minor fringe parties.
But okay, yeah.
Things have now changed dramatically, right? And mm. and France, I think, has some of the most interesting politics around.
Absolutely.
How to explain to someone who only understands a little bit about France, who are the parties on the left now?
So who are the parties on the left? As you said, there was the Socialist Party. Mm. They still exist. They are sort of center-left, but are taking sort of a more left-wing approach. Why? Because they've really declined since Hollande, for example, who was the last president from the mm. PS. And now currently the big party on the left is what we call LFI. So LFI, France Insoumise, I guess, Unbowed France.
Yeah.
And they have gone the full, you know, the full, the worst aspects of the left that you can imagine. Yeah. So full on woke, but even worse, where they're almost toned that down to just go just full pro-Muslim, full, I guess, like communists, yeah, sort of.
So radical left, and very much, yeah, full communism, but also I think probably, at least not as much as is in the case in America and Australia, much more pro-Muslim than probably where...
Very, very much so pro-Muslim with like actual links between like pretty far, like the pro-Palestine to the max. And also doing a lot of, I guess, agitation, you could call it, or okay. just... doing a lot of violent protests and everything. And even beyond that, I sort of stress the radical leftists on top of just the Muslim aspect, because there are a lot of violent groups in France, very, very left-wing groups in universities and so on, who do actual like violent actions, who have no issues just showing that error, that they are linked with that party.
And that, I mean, not to get sidetracked, but that was always sort of predicted. I remember that novel, the Wilbeck novel, right? Michael Wilbeck, who wrote the novel, who said there would be a coalition between the very radical elements of the Muslim Brotherhood and similar parties and the radical left, and they would form this big party of the left, which would then sort of take over France.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're the parties of the left, simply defined, and they did actually do quite successful, were quite successful.
Yes, in the last legislative election, they did something that they also did in last election, but that's sort of unprecedented, is that they all went into a big coalition, so like the PS, as we talked about, the LFI. And the Greens and some smaller parties, they all went into one big coalition to get as many seats as possible. And they had a good chunk of the assembly at the end, about one third or something. But among the three blocks, as we call them, they had the biggest amount of...
And that's the Assemblée Nationale, which is effectively the parliament of France, the Congress of France, yeah. And then there's the centrist or so-called centrist, which is... which is where Emmanuel Macron likes to position himself. I mean, whether he is centrist or what is up to be, but that's a block, right? And who are they?
They're a very, I'm not even going to say interesting bunch, but it's sort of an eclectic coalition that sort of just is united through the figure of Emmanuel Macron. He started it in 2017 when he was elected for the first time. He emerged as the economy minister for François Hollande, so under a socialist government, but he went a lot to that sort of pro-free market side, more centrist side of the center-left. Mm. Now, that's sort of the rhetoric you went to with, because the actual like free market and stuff sort of like was toned down and he just went sort of non-ideological, full centrist.
Mm.
And where I must say there was an interesting aspect to his movement at the beginning in 2017, because there was sort of a, you know, a renewal of all the political class.
Mm.
They had a lot of elected officials sort of out of nowhere. Mm. So that was an interesting factoid about them, I want to say. But the thing is, in the few years as he stayed as a president, he was just joined by all the leftovers from the Republicans and the Socialist Party that sort of joined him. And now he's sort of a coalition of all, as I said, the leftovers from the two big parties that used to be the main ones.
It is interesting and somewhat unique, though, and quite impressive in a way to establish a new party from the center. You know, usually it's either from the left or the right, and it kind of came from nowhere. I think it was En Marche was his party, but it was called right, and then it became La Renaissance or something different.
Renaissance.
So, and he took the presidency, which again is not easy to do. And his reputation now is what in France? I mean, his popularity's low.
He's down the drain. His reputation would be. It's very funny because the left is going to picture him as a fascist or something, and the right is going to picture him as someone not necessarily very left-wing, but just very anti-national, I could say. So that has no issues like selling out his country, different things. For example, if we just talk about immigration, that has just kept going up and up.
Mm.
There's also like a fun factoid about Macron. Yeah, he has a bunch of, how do I say, like affairs? Not affairs, that's not the word. Affaire.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for example, there was a big thing when he was a minister of the economy.
Mm.
He sold out like a big turbines, like industrial, very valuable assets in France that he just like sold out some American company. And he took like a big chunk of the payout. And that's sort of a big thing because I think it was like nuclear related or something.
Mm.
And the big thing of France is that we've always been really into our independence, sovereignty.
Yeah.
And just the fact of like selling out to an American company, like a big, very strategic industrial key asset, was is such a symbol for what he is in some aspects.
Yeah, he's a technocrat, right? That's
a technocrat. A technocrat is a great way to put it because he was a banker at Rothschild or something like that.
Yeah, and from what's he from Le Grand École, right? The Ivy League type of universities in France and that particular class. And I must say that occasionally he comes out with things which are impressive. I mean, I remember when they were tearing down statues in England, and he came out and basically said, "We don't do that in France." And it was just so.
That's the thing. He's not like full woke, full leftist, which is sort of rare to see. But that's the thing. He sort of likes to project an image of a strong resilient, smart person. But actually, when you look at the actual policies, some are not the worst, but the main thing and a lot of it is just really, really bad. And as you said, the technocrat is just sort of a way to put it. But even around him, there's a lot who like fear very, what I call like les bons élèves, so like good pupils.
Yeah.
Good pupils. People who had like good marks at schools.
Yeah, nerds.
don't have necessarily, you know, the best, well, not the most brilliant. Mm. You know, there's a lot of things when you have a lot of diplomas, sometimes you're just sort of the most conformist person.
Yeah, a teacher's pet.
That's my
interesting thing for Macron, because he did marry
literally. And that's sort of how I see them, sort of. And the thing is, when they try to never go too much in one direction or another, you just get a slow decline.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. But the most interesting part and the most dynamic part of French politics is the right. And so just explain to me, you know, people in Australia will have heard of Marine Le Pen and perhaps Marion Maréchal, who's often on YouTube because she speaks well and is good looking, and you know, and she's also spoken at CPAC in the US. She had quite a high profile there for a while. But yeah, just explain to me the landscape on the right.
Yeah. So the first big party, I guess, we have to talk about is Les Républicains, the Republicans. That used to be like the Socialist Party, the main party of the right, right to center right. And currently they've just been declining because they've refused to talk about, I'd say, two main issues. The first one is immigration, where they're sort of being sort of critical, but they have a really, really hard aspect to actually first do anything about it and actually like talk about it. That's the two aspects they've really had for a long while, a very hard time with. And the second aspect is sort of talking to a more popular class of people, to stop talking to just like the upper middle classes. We don't want to get their clothes dirty and everything. And that was their two main issues. And they've just like kept declining. And so now they're sort of in a coalition with Macron. And so now you can just put them with the Macron bloc in the same coalition. Mm-hmm. And that's why, for example, they're in government right now with the centrist bloc of Macron.
So when you say they're in coalition, because it works slightly different in France, the president has selected someone from that party in parliament to be the prime minister? Is that
what happened? Yeah, the current one is Bayrou, so he's from the centrist wing, but he has a bunch of ministers who are from the Republicans.
Got it. Yeah.
And they are in the coalition. By the way, they don't have an absolute majority. They have a plurality. So their government is really shaky. It could fall any time. It could fall any time. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got the traditional Republicans are, I would say, like the Tory party in the UK or possibly like the Liberal Party in Australia, mainstream right, don't talk immigration too much, don't want to frighten, you know, nice middle class people.
The whole bourgeois sort of sensibilities.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds very familiar. But there are other parties to the right of them. And so who are they?
Exactly. And the big one that is just growing as it's maybe the only party that's actually growing in France. That's the Rassemblement National, the National Rally, which I guess you can't talk about without talking about the predecessor, I guess, the Front National, which was Jean-Marie Le Pen's party, which you must not, you have to talk about because it's just been a mainstay in French politics for so long. I think it was created in the 70s, I guess. And in the first election, they had like 1 or 2%, but very early on, they just kept a steady, you know, 10-15% in the election, which is a big chunk of the electorate. And in 2017, when Macron came along, and the two mainstream parties just didn't know what to do with him, Le Pen and the National Rally sort of swoop in to ride sort of the same wave and to talk sort of, I guess, what we call the leftover people from the globalization. So there was a lot of talk about immigration, of course, was the main one. It's always been the main one. But also there's also that whole like deindustrialization aspect of it, of the economy that's just going to just getting destroyed. I think in France, our part of the GDP that's actual like industrial economy is very low. I think it's like 7%. That's an interesting aspect. With Switzerland, for example, it's like 20%. Mm. In France, it's really, really low. There's a lot and lot of services. And very little industry. And there's a lot of areas of poor areas that have become really, really poor because of the industry going going to China.
It all sounds very, very familiar themes, deindustrialization, immigration. I actually remember when I was in France, whatever it was, 20 years ago, that there were in the south of France, there were Jean-Marie Le Pen posters there. Yeah. Back in the day, so I certainly he's been around. He has been around for a long period of time.
He's been around, strong force.
And so his Marine Le Pen is his. She's his daughter. Is that right? Or niece?
Daughter, oh, sorry, yeah, niece. Daughter, yeah.
Daughter. And so she's the leader of the Rassemblement National. And so what? Yes, she's been recently. In the news, what is the and I mean, I'm sure people have read the news, but I'll flesh it out. She was convicted of a charge of embezzlement of public funds, but there were serious question marks about and then banned, I think, from running for president for yep. or any public office for 5 years, which means that she's can't be a candidate if that judgment holds for the upcoming presidential election in 2027. So that happened, I think, only a week ago, right? Over a week ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's the current status of that? What developments have happened since that time?
That's an interesting thing because she's filing an appeal. And so there's been, obviously, it's been a big scandal, even in the within the political class, even with people who are not like friends with us, have been sort of like shocked by the news and so on. So her appeal should be probably next year or something. Whereas it's usually these things like take years. So the courts have said, well, yeah, we're going to make like an exception to have it like quicker to look at the case again.
It seems politically motivated, like a lot of the actions that were taking against, President Trump, now President Trump in France. Yeah.
The thing is, yeah, actually, it's so hard to explain. Even to French people, it's very hard to explain because it's a very technical aspect of the decision of the judge that was, it's really a very technical term and that just doesn't exist. Like they made up a term to charge her on something, which it shouldn't have existed.
I think the funds involved weren't a huge amount anyway, and it seems like there should have been, even if there was a technical breach, then there should have been a different remedy. She shouldn't have been banned for 5 years. You could do something, repay the money, or address the technicality.
That's also the thing. If I explain just quickly the actual fact of the case, is that in France, you know, when you have like an elected official in the parliament, he has like, let's say, 10,000 euros a month to pay out assistance.
Yeah.
And the assistance, like if he wants, he can take like one assistant that he pays 10,000. Or he can take 10 that he pays 1,000 each.
Sure.
And he's just like, there's your money for your assistants and you do whatever you want with it. Mm-hmm. And since they're like political assistants, they help him write laws, look into subjects, of course, as one does, but there's also a whole political aspect of it. So if you got to go back to where you were elected and talk to your people in the area where you were elected, your assistants are going to help you, like find a car, organize meeting with your voters and so on. So there's a very political aspect to it. Mm. So you can't just remove like the technical aspect to the actual political work, mm. like talking to people and so on. Mm. And the case right now, which is interesting because a lot of other parties have had the same problems as the Le Pen party. So, for example, our current prime minister, Bayrou, was indicted for the same facts, essentially. And even like the Mélenchon, the France Insoumise, had the same problems.
Yeah.
And the thing is, actually, it's with those parties, those three parties have in common that they're sort of smaller parties who used to have a really hard time having elected officials in the national parliament. Mm. And the only election where they could have like some important elected officials mm. were in the European parliament.
Mm.
So in the European parliament, they had a few elected member of parliaments. And so these people had same thing, like a bunch of money to pay out assistants to do work for them, political work, but also like technical work and so on. But there's where there's a disagreement, it's actually between the European Parliament and the French political party conception of how does an assistant work. And so the European Parliament's point is sort of that an assistant should only do technical work. So he should only write laws and not
rather do anything. Party work. You know, we have the same issue here with electoral yeah. expenditure and the like. And it just seems to me, to just summarize it, it was the penalty was far disproportionate.
Yeah. And that's also the thing that yeah. Bayrou had the same problems
yeah.
and he had like 1/10 of the penalties that Le Pen had.
So what does this mean then? I mean, is it likely that she will be banned? Will there be an appeal? And if she is banned, who fills her role as a leader of the riot?
That's why the Rassemblement National has been very, very smart. That's why where they've been like just perfect. Currently, I'm going to say, I don't know. I don't know if she can run. Maybe she will. Maybe she won't. It's really up to the courts. And frankly, like currently the likelihood is like around 50-50. We really don't know if she's going to be able to run. But what's really interesting is that she has a number two, which is Jordan Bardella,
yeah,
who was the head of the list for the European elections that we had in June 2024.
And just for people, he is that they may have seen photos of this guy. He's this young, fit, you know, well-dressed guy, very articulate, sort of came from humble beginnings. He didn't quite succeed. It was expected, but it was still a very good showing for the right. Yeah.
In the European elections, he did very good, mm-hmm. but then there were the legislative elections right after that were like just snap elections, and that's happened right. very, very quickly. And like those, because it's a two-round system, because the National Rally was sort of expected to win it, mm-hmm. all of the other people like sort of banded together to sort of stop that from happening. So now yeah. our Parliament is sort of cut into three almost equal pieces, oh. which is sort of hard to deal with. But mm. yes, that's what it is. Mm. So it's true for the national elections, it was sort of disappointing. But for the European Parliament, he had a very long campaign right before for months where he just gained and gained in popularity. The young people, he is very popular with the young people. And as you said, yeah, he came from humble beginnings. He came from the northern suburbs of Paris, which are
yeah.
Very poor and very full of immigrants, for example. And yeah, I just like came from that almost no study, just like went to the party and just get activism, and so on to become the head. And now he's about 29, I think. And he's
so will he take over potentially from Marine Le Pen and run? You don't think?
If she comes French, he's gonna run. And that's why I'm saying they've been so smart. They've set up a sort of duo system where both of them are just as popular as the other. Of course, I guess I feel like Marine Le Pen sort of has an advantage because she has like your experience behind her that Jordan Bardella still doesn't have. And so she even has sort of an aura about her, about being in politics for so long and so on, that Jordan Bardella still has to sort of build up to. But she's already like super popular, just as popular as her. And there's also an interesting aspect about him is that for some reason he appeals more to the reasonable centrist voter. So for example, the Republican voter is going to really likes Jordan Bardella because he sort of has the same thing as Macron, to be fair.
Yeah.
If you just look at him, that's sort of like the same appeal. He's sort of like trying to rejuvenate things and so on without having like the Le Pen name on him, because her father was a big controversial figure and so on. And even though I think a lot of people are really emotionally attached with Marine Le Pen, if she controlled, Jordan Bardella can run with no issue at all.
I have heard criticism that that she's softened her image, de-diabolized the Front National, and as a result she's thrown away a lot of things. But is that a fair criticism, do you think?
I guess it's a fair criticism, I mean the thing in France is that we have a two-round system. So you really have to get like 50.1% of the vote to get elected. Yep. And to get that, actually, the thing is that it's working. Mm-hmm. And even beyond that, I don't think the pushing away some like more radical people. I don't think it's that bad.
No.
And in a way, her issue is not that as much, but just like trying to find smart and competent people to put in the right places when power happens, which probably will, crossing fingers. But that's sort of the issue right now. But there was some criticism of like sort of like the old guard of like Jean-Marie, the father, is sort of critical of that or aspects. But I think the work she's done has been really excellent. And so technically, it's a fair criticism, but I think it's worth it. And
it sounds interesting.
It's the plan, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I find it interesting too that the fact that you've got this coalition between the older nationalist right, and the younger nationalist right, which, to oversimplify, the younger, much more professional looking. And come to it without any of the baggage, and are very internet savvy and good at talking like. I don't know whether anyone, I haven't seen that phenomenon. I guess the United States is somewhat similar in some ways, but I haven't seen that exact phenomena elsewhere in the world. What about some of the other characters on the right? I mentioned her before. Marion Maréchal. So where does she fit in? Is her star completely waned?
Well, that's sort of no. She's still around. I guess we got to talk about Zemmour, who was very big figure on the right as
Eric Zemmour,
Eric Zemmour as an intellectual on the right. Okay. He's always been a very you got the whole collection. He's a very very important. It was always on TV, about these things for years and years and just dozens of years. And actually, his criticism of Marine Le Pen wasn't so much that she was less radical than before. There was some of that, but actually his criticism was that if she wants to win, she has to do like a union of the right wing. So that whole, bourgeois wing of the Republicans that I talked about, his whole point was that you have to talk to them and you have to sort of make a union with them. And that now there was some of, sort of a class struggle there as well, where, Marine Le Pen really banked on the very popular classes, the popular French classes of rural areas and so on, for example. And there was sort of a clash with like the more bourgeois right-wing wing.
Right. Some people in Australia will have heard of Eric Zemmour, but he is was a long-time journalist, right? Very articulate, very suave, very cultured, I think you'd say. And also, he was more like, like an intellectual Pat Buchanan or something along those lines, which was always on the talk shows, engaging with people, fairly consistent throughout his career. Why? And he was a candidate for president in the last presidential election.
In 2022.
But he was not successful. And I was surprised. I thought he would be more successful.
He started the campaign strong. But in the end, he got like 7%, which is not that bad because in France, to get reimbursed to all your campaign fees, you have to get like 5%.
Okay.
So as long as you do 5%, it's not that lost. So he did a little bit less well than was expected, but that's also because at the very last time, Mélenchon, the very left-wing guy, had a surge in the polls. And for example, like I was... I know people like who hesitated to vote Zemmour, but like saw that surge of Mélenchon in the polls, and like if he went above Marine and he was like 1 or 2% close to go into the second round, and so they had to vote Marine just to prevent Mélenchon having like a Macron versus Mélenchon in the second round. So there was like that didn't help him, and he was like more popular than just the 7% that he had to give him that. And that's his big thing. He was really trying to do a union of the right, of like the more popular anti-immigration national rally wing and the more like centrist, more, clean bourgeois wing of the Republicans, and almost more conservative as well, because the national rally has, doesn't really have that conservative aspect to the party, which I think is a good thing because you don't, you're not closed. It can be like you can put
like
some people.
You mean socially conservative? Is that
socially conservative?
More so when you say
it's really mostly like about
nation,
the economy, and the immigration, and beyond that, like even in French, I think there's a whole part of the electorate that's quite conservative, but it's not that big. And even though they're important, I think. If you push that too much, it can be really put up on people more than something else. He was trying to do that bridge of the right, which sort of didn't really work out. Le Pen lost in the second round. But what's really interesting is that in 2024, when the snap election was called, the president of the Republicans, Eric Ciotti, who was like a big political figure around Nice, in the southeast of France, went on TV and said, yeah, we have to do like a union with the National Rally, the Republicans with the National Rally, and which was a historic moment in French politics because like any sort of alliance with the National Rally had like never happened before that. Well, it just so happens that his party, that was more of the bourgeois, respectable, whatever centrist wing, sort of like kicked him out because of that. But there was
I remember seeing footage on TV of him being locked out of the offices of the party.
I mean, that whole like political sequence, you could do like two seasons of an amazing TV show about it. I mean, you should sell the rights to Netflix or something, because
there is a block amongst the mainstream right Republicans that simply can't deal with the new right or the
that's the thing. And the thing with the Republicans also is that they have a lot of local elected officials. And I feel like the local elected officials are much more reactionary in a sense, where they don't want to be associated with anything too controversial, because they're really like in their small towns, in their small city, elected with their small electorate, and they're really, and I think they have a lot of power in that party, and they really don't want to do anything too controversial. And if the party just goes from like 20 to 5 to 3%, if they keep like their small seat in their local city, they don't care. That's why I think the Republicans Party has a big problem with that. But that didn't stop like Eric Ciotti and a bunch of other people from the Republican Party who wanted to like revitalize their party to form their own party, which is called the UDR, which I'm currently helping as well. To form an alliance with Le Pen. That started in 2024.
There seem to be, just in a way that boggles the mind for someone in Australia, so many coalitions and partnerships and stuff that are going on. Because our political parties here don't form that, but the dynamic is different. But there has to be, if I'm understanding correctly, in your view, some more coalition building on the right in order to take the presidency eventually. Yeah. So,
That's what's really interesting with Eric Ciotti, is that he sort of did what Zemmour was trying to do, to build that bridge with like the more traditional right and the more nationalistic, I guess, right that was gaining in popularity and in momentum, and that at some point you have, and there's a lot of, whatever you said, there's a lot of interesting, intelligent people with the center-right party that are like worth trying to get on our side as well. And there's building that bridge is interesting for the electorate, but also to find these intelligent, interesting people that have a lot to offer to the country.
One of the, again, interesting characteristics, at least it seems from a distance, about France, is that there really is a surge amongst young people in support of the nationalistic right. What explains that? Is it simply because they've bumped up against issues like immigration and everything else? Has it been driven by media? I mean, what happened first? Was it the party or the youth or what, the surge, or how did it work?
Yeah, I was going to say Jordan Bardella is like super popular on TikTok.
Yeah.
Not like he's doing TikToks himself, but like the party posts TikToks of him and they blow up to a large extent. And so they're quite good on that aspect of the communication. But beyond that, I guess it's the, immigration, just everyone sees it. And, that's also what I say, like when I talk to older people who hesitate to vote for us and whatever, I tell them, okay, but imagine a young person in France that's sort of intelligent, that sort of wants to change things, and who's not like a radical, like insane leftist. Where is he going to go? He's not going to go to the Republicans, because that party is just dying. He's not going to go to Macron, because him again, I think there was a Renaissance, his party had like 8,000 members that was announced recently, which is almost nothing, really almost nothing. He's just going to go to the national rally, because that's where the energy is. That's where it's gaining popularity. That's also where you feel like you're not burdened by too many things. And so where you can actually bring new ideas. And if you want to fix something and you want to bring like a solution to some party, you're going to go to the national rally, because they, as I said, they're not burdened by anything in a way.
Yeah,
there's the immigration.
Yeah, a friend of mine who was in France, he said his girlfriend who used to vote Green in Australia after spending a year in France was strongly in favor of Le Pen. So yeah, that was largely because of her interaction with street level issues, immigration.
Yeah, of course, that's a big one. There's an interesting thing I'm going to mention after that. Just question: do you know in which city she lived? Or not?
I think it was Paris. I think it was Paris.
Probably. I mean, probably. And what's interesting, there's also been beyond the national rally, there's sort of a whole like media ecosystem of like the right wing in France has sort of been building up. And there's about like the street harassment, for example, there's a really interesting initiative. There's the what we call the Collective Nemesis. And you might have seen them because they've been in the UK, like showing what they are doing in some demonstrations. And they're sort of like openly like a feminist association that just speaks out on like all the violence that just devolves from immigration and all the problems that happen to women because of immigration. And they've been really vocal and they're doing like really, really interesting and good work. And so that's a really interesting aspect that I think is underused by many people.
That phenomenon doesn't exist in Australia yet, and I don't know whether it exists really in the UK or the US yet. But it's sort of interesting that for the France that has a reputation for some quite attractive French women who are used to a particular lifestyle, and now they're bumping up against a very different conception of how they should live. Yeah.
I guess that's also the big thing with national rally. Also, is that the leader is a woman, and an interesting thing with that is that if you look at the votes between men and women for the national rally, it's like 50-50. There's no difference between like there's no more men that vote for the national rally than women. I think it's a really interesting aspect as well. But that's the thing. They are doing a very sort of unique thing, which I really don't see a lot, but you have to do it well. And when it's done well, it can be very powerful. And I think they're doing it well.
Interesting. How is Donald Trump viewed in France at the moment? Is he a positive for the national right, or is he a negative? Because I've seen in Canada that the conservatives, more mainstream conservatives, and they've tanked in the polls since Donald Trump's election. So what has been, has there been a similar effect in France?
That's a great question, because I think the national rally's strategy has been just excellent about that. Because the national rally has that whole aspect of being sovereignist. And in France, we have all that very proud aspect, sort of almost anti-American thing. So even within the national rally, where I don't think it affects everybody, there's sort of a anti-American, like pro-sovereignty undercurrent.
That's existed since Charles de Gaulle, really. It's always been
foreign. But what's really interesting is that thanks to that, and not just that, thanks to just smart strategy, they've really distanced themselves from Trump in a very smart way. And the rhetoric was pretty much, if Trump gets elected, it's probably a good thing for the American people. Will it be a good thing for France? It only depends on whether we want to respond to an appropriate manner to the Trump presidency. So do we want to take back our sovereignty? Do we want to actually be a strong nation? Or do we want to just be a puppet nation or whatever, or like big national, international institution, whether it be the European Union or the Trump presidency? And so in a way, the rhetoric was really to sort of distance themselves and not to associate themselves with Trump, because as with any country, like, it doesn't have a good image for the majority of the French people. So it was really smart to just say, yeah, our position hasn't changed. We still want the independence and the sovereignty of France. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been working towards. And if Trump gets elected, it's probably a very good thing for the American people because it's probably going to fix things for them. But for us, it doesn't change anything. Our position is still the same. It doesn't affect us.
I think you've got the advantage that the national right in France has been around for a long period of time and is organic. It has its own identity, whereas criticism of other countries, of conservative politicians, has been, oh, they're trying to be a Donald Trump or change to be, which you guys don't have their reputation. I'll just a few more questions to finish up. If let's call it the national right, Le Pen or Bardella or one of those guys does seize the presidency, win the presidency in 2027, right? What does that mean? Does France, how do things change? Does France leave the European Union? What does it mean for immigration? What does it mean for France's role in the world?
Yeah. First of all, I'm going to do like a small remark. As you said, the national right in France is very organic, and we have that advantage that a lot of countries have tried to sort of surf the Trump wave and associate themselves with Trump to sort of gain popularity from that. And I think from the beginning that it was a bad idea because you want to get associated with something that's winning and powerful, but if in your own country, you really have to fight against doing that too much, you know? Mm. But beyond that, yeah, if Le Pen gets elected, what does it mean? There was a big criticism of the European Union. So we're not going to leave it because so much is connected to the European Union. And a big reason why the party used to want to leave it was that the party didn't see any person they could talk to within the European Union like 10 years ago or like 15 years ago. But now, if you look at the European Parliament, a majority of it is right-wing and a good chunk of it is like national right-wing. And so they've built a lot of international European coalitions with parties that they can actually talk with. And I know the big one is Meloni, for example, or other parties. Yep. And so I think the relation with the European Union is probably going to change. It's not going to be just a subservience relation. I think the power, differential is going to sort of switch, sort of like try to change the politics of the European Union in a less, ideological and crazy way, I'd say. And beyond that, I think immigration is going to be a big thing because there is so much that we just can change very easily that is just not being done. That's the thing in France. When you are elected president, usually you have the assembly with you and you can do a lot of things. You're not constrained too much by different parts of the government. Mm-hmm. Well, you are in some aspects, to be fair, that's sort of something that will have to be dealt with because, as I said, like I didn't say it, but we have a huge amount of bureaucracy in France. I think like our public spending is like 53% of the GDP, which is like the highest in the world. By the way, what COT is doing with the Republicans who joined Le Pen is sort of like taking that more free market aspect that is really interesting, I think will be used strategically to push the, if you use it strategically to push your politics, you can do a lot of things with it. I think it's really interesting. Beyond that, there's also the whole justice reform, I think. Okay. Because, there's a lot of laws that were passed when under the Hollande presidency that are just insane in different aspects and sort of like taking back the courts, not having people who are like foreigners who are like condemned like 20 times are like just free again, like just the stabbing people. Yeah. And then like, you know, they're like back in the courts for one day and then they're just free in the nature.
Yeah,
like,
I know. It's
we have a lot of that as well. So that's a big aspect we can just very easily play on. Yeah, as I said, the whole like insecurity, you know, insecurity, crime has been like through the roof, and that can be fixed. Not that hard to do it. You just have to want to do it. So crime, immigration, and I hope bureaucracy, I think, are going to be the main things, and the relation to the European Union.
Yeah.
As you said.
How do you think it could all go wrong? So how could the it had fall apart? How could the socialists and the left-wing party regroup and stop this happening?
The big thing that the first thing that might be really hard to deal with is all the rioting. And that's probably from the very far right, the left. There's probably going to be a lot of rioting. I think not as much as some expect, but some very fringe radical element are just like gonna try their best just to impede any sort of reform.
Yeah, right.
That's going to have to be dealt with. That's going to be pretty hard. But we'll see. Hopefully, I think if we are smart, we can sort of, I don't know, lead them into some useless fights. For example, like they want to fight us. And like if we sort of lead them towards fights that don't really matter, but that matter to them, we can sort of like lure them to actually like do what we want to do. In the background and sort of like
think tactics,
you have to be strategic about it, I think, just be a bit Machiavellian about it, I guess.
Yeah, I've been again impressed with the professionalism, at least it seems, of the parties on the right or the new right in France. We are not at the same stage in Australia. Again, we've got the two existing political parties. I think the Conservative Party in Australia is slightly more keen to address some of the issues on immigration than maybe some more traditional parties are, but there's still a long way, in my view, from anything remotely satisfactory. So it is possible that a new party or whatever would emerge on the right. What advice would you give to those about establishing new parties and pulling it together? How can it be done well, and how can it be done poorly?
Very good question. I think you have to start with. That's something I've thought about actually recently. I think you have to start with. The most important is to be coherent. And to be coherent in how you organized and how in what you think as well. And as long as you're coherent and you offer like a coherent model to know what you think and to show what you think and to explain what you think, I think people who are, disillusioned with what they have currently, their first reflex is to go look somewhere else, and they're not going to go for the things that are like sort of building themselves and that are like not sure of what they're doing. And they're going to look for things that are coherent and that have like a known reason to themselves. And I think as long as you, it's made even like an intellectual like coherence to the doctrine that you have. If it's coherent, you may be like 12 people. Being coherent is really the key, because you offer like a system and a pre-made system that people can grab onto, and not just a wobbly structure that can fall apart.
It's ideology, which is bigger than just individuals.
And I think beyond ideology, then it's going to be like organization as well, more day-to-day preoccupations. But I think being coherent is very important, because that's what people are going to look for. They are going to look for things that already exist and that they don't have, because people are lazy. They don't want to do it themselves. Yeah. And if you offer them, look, it's already done. you can just join us and we tell you what to do, quote unquote. Like you can just do that to help that already coherent existing thing. I think that's a very good aspect to it.
Yeah. Well, look, Roman, I won't keep you any long because I usually keep these to an hour. I'd be happy to discuss a lot more aspects further.
Yeah.
But if people want to find out more about you individually, because you've got an X handle or where you post in French, but I think people can translate it or get
English.
Or find out more about French, the new French ride. Right. Where would you recommend they go?
A very good question. My handle is like Romain, Romain _BKR. And beyond that, I think just following the news of like Le Pen, Bardella, Ciotti, of course, is interesting. I think there are maybe media outlets that are sort of interesting, that are sort of being created on the right media sphere, I guess. There's, I guess, Frontières, which can be good. The Nemesis Collective, like the feminist collective, I think it can be interesting. They're doing interesting work.
If you try those stories, I'll pop them in the show notes. So people can look at them,
I'm just like thinking of stuff like, F the Sushi is the big one. F the Sushi is very interesting because it used to be, it's run by the guy who ran Jean-Marie Le Pen's internet campaign in like 2007.
Okay.
And he started like a small blog with like all the crime that happens, but that you know that you only find in small local papers.
Yeah.
He sort of like put that in a whole area. And he's been just doing it consistently for years and years. And in the end, it's an amazing resource for a bunch of things. And that goes even a bit further than just crime. And that's very interesting. I think F the Sushi is really, really fun. And I mean, fun, I don't know, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, informative. Yeah.
Now, I'll send you a bunch of interesting people that you can put.
Yeah, great stuff. And I'll pop them in the show notes and so people can check them out and go there if they're interested. Once again, fantastic to talk to you and great for making time. And I think there's only good things that can come from people making connections internationally. Everyone's country is going to be different, but there are some lessons to be learned and useful things that can be shared. So, à plus. À la prochaine.
À la prochaine.
Bye. Bye.